Today, we welcome to the program MBTA General Manager Philip Eng to provide us a little update on how things are going at the T, especially along the Red Line here on Quincy and the South Shore. Mr. Eng, thank you so much for spending some time with us.
Well, I appreciate an opportunity to do that. Thank you.
Oh, it's our pleasure. It's been a little over, what, but a year and a half now since you've come on board there at the T as General Manager. How would you kind of grade yourself so far?
You know what? I leave the grading of my performance to the public I serve, but I am going to grade my team. The team has been really fantastic. They've stepped up, and we've been making fulfilling our commitments that we've made. And that's really what I want to be able to demonstrate to the public, that when we say we can do something, there may be some hiccups along the way, but we will get it done. And our goal is safe, reliable, more frequent service so people can not only trust it and rely on it, that maybe it becomes a preferred choice of travel.
What would you say have been kind of some of the major changes that have taken place over the past year and a half in terms of, number one, the processes and the way you do things at the T, and number two, kind of the overall culture at the T?
Well, I think some of the things that I hope is coming across is communication and transparency. And that's not just publicly, but that's also internally. I think one of the reasons that we're seeing improved results is the communication across all of our functional areas. So it's not just capital delivery on what they intend to do, but it's capital delivery and how they work with operations to not only be able to successfully perform the work, but how does operations support the work? At the end, they're the ones that receive it. And is that what they're looking for so they can better serve the public? And then with the public, it's what their expectations, what are we promising, what are we fulfilling? And if there's issues, again, how do we share that with them so they know in full transparency on when things can be expected and when they could see improvements?
You've made a commitment to eliminate all slow zones on all rapid transit lines by the end of this year. Are you still on track to do that?
Yes, we are. Initially, when we made that commitment, there was a long road ahead. But with every one of these diversions that we went through, and as we successfully delivered on those, we've learned along the way how to even do better. And the one along the red line that we recently finished at the end of September, those 24 days, it was record work in terms of the amount of work we performed. Over 70,000 feet of rail that was replaced, being able to restore the system back to its maximum speed, and not only fixing the restrictions, but addressing state of good repair adjacent to those locations to give us a longer-term ability to now perform cyclical maintenance, corrective repairs, and keep the system in a state that the public deserves and expects.
Seeing as you brought up the Red Line, can you bring us any update on the status of the new trains that are coming onto the Red Line?
Well, yes. All of the new cars, both Red Line and Orange Line, are instrumental in terms of not only the track that we're fixing, but the rolling stock that now rides on them. We have currently 28 of the 252 Red Line cars in our system. Of those 28, we're running 3 6-car consists right now. The remaining cars are going through the final burn-in mode, and we anticipate adding a fourth consist in the coming weeks. As we continue to receive Red Line cars, and for instance, this month, with the new schedule that CRC has committed to, we're expecting 6 total cars, of which 4 of them will be Red Line cars, and that will continue to bring our total up by the end of October, the 32 Red Line cars. They remain on schedule. The cars continue to perform at a level above the contractual requirements. And there's been a really good, solid team effort between MBTA leadership and the managers on this project, working with CRRC and all of their vendors in order to make sure we're looking at the schedule ahead and proactively discussing any issues that may come up, whether it's materials, schedules, and just making sure that the project and the schedule that we laid out can be fulfilled going forward.
As it stands right now, when is that schedule complete? When do all the new Red Line cars come to the fleet?
Well, the way this works out now, we're looking at the end of February 27. I mean, the end of fiscal year 27. But at the same time, the cars continue to go in. So as we get new cars, we're going to add to the number of train sets that we're running. And at some point, we'll be starting to eliminate and remove some of the older fleet and eventually replenishing with all new fleet.
Do you anticipate any further shutdowns along the Red Line this year?
We do have a few more in November. to tackle some of the restrictions. I believe we have four restrictions near JFK, and then we have one further up near the Kendall MIT area. Those restrictions, once done, Red Line will be restriction free from end to end, along all the branches, by the end of November. And we're really excited about that. Just an example, the work that we did in September, that gave people back 24 minutes of their daily travel if you make that round trip Braintree to JFK, UMass. And then right now, currently, we continue to review the ability to take that section in certain stretches where the geometry and alignment allows to take those trains above the 40 miles an hour. That's currently our maximum speed. And we're very optimistic that we could do better than we're doing today.
What is the top speed of those trains? Which should it be, I guess?
Well, what we're looking for and striving for in certain locations where we have long distances is 50 miles an hour. And that will give our riders additionally, probably maybe we're estimating around additional 3 minutes of improved travel time. And again, as you have better travel time, you have better reliability of the schedule, and that will allow us to have the better frequency and ultimately work towards reducing headways, not only at the core of the system, but also on the branches.
Are you able to talk a little bit about maintenance going forward, Mr. Eng, and the changes that have been made to make sure that the slowdowns and the speed restrictions don't happen again?
Yes, in fact, one of the things that even before I got here, Governor Healey, Lieutenant Governor Driscoll, excuse me, very focused on the workforce. And we have been very aggressively growing our workforce to where now we're over 7,700 employees. And a lot of that growth has been on the frontline operational teams, safety, track workers, power, signal, all of the folks that are tied to the public-facing components. We are training our workforce differently. We're creating a safety culture. And our real goal here now is get the system where it's running safe, reliable, but now we maintain it. And the intent is to get in there and do proper inspections, schedule work as needed, but also do it in a manner that we don't have to go through these types of diversions month after month, week after week. There will be times where a diversion and a closure makes sense because of the ability to get in, get it done, and get out, and the productivity that comes along with it. But really, moving forward is how do we do the right maintenance in the windows that we have? That could mean the overnights. It could mean early access where we close a little earlier. It could also mean weekend work. And a combination of those, and then as we go further down the road and we better train and develop new techniques. I've talked a little bit about it, but the ability to run on single track, meaning we're running train service on one side while we're doing work on another side. And then this way, we can continue to allow people to not only use trains, but if we need be, we could reduce the burden on needing additional buses, knowing that the roadways are congested already. The real thing is to keep them on the trains, supplement with buses, but not to the same level.
Right, as I understand it, the main issue with that is access, right? Just because of the infrastructure and the way things are built, just trying to stage equipment to make repairs.
Yes, in fact, there's been some cases where the limits of our diversions or the limits of access require that we actually impact more of the system. What we're doing right now is we're taking an evaluation. We currently have one up in the Alewife area that we're building a new access point. And as we give ourselves more flexibility and operational capabilities, we'll be able to manage differently. Even our power system, the way it is built, sometimes we're taking out longer stretches to do work than if we were to come in and find ways to segment the power differently. So these are all things as we move ahead and as we do new projects, where's the best point to be able to create more flexibility in terms of maintenance, operations, and minimizing the impact to the riders?
Can we talk a little bit about the status of the new bus garage that's being built right here in Quincy along Bergen Parkway, where that stands, where it's going?
Sure. Right now, I believe that project was somewhere around $310 million. Proud to say right now it remains on budget. It remains on schedule. Probably somewhere in 2027 year as well for completion. And it's exciting because that is the beginning of building new facilities for battery electric buses. We expect to have 10 battery electric buses at the end of this year that will be put into the system, and then we'll have more going forward. And that's in part due to federal grants that we won, and but we're committed to not only improving bus service, but trying to do our best to have zero emission fleets as we continue to move forward. But the facility is important for that because we need someplace to maintain the newer equipment,
Yeah, when that's, I'm sorry, go ahead.
as well as the facilities to maintain our existing until we could convert fully. So it's a matter of managing both fleets.
Right, when that facility is complete, can you tell me how many buses will be able to be serviced there?
One of the things that we're looking at right now is how do we manage our bus system, and is there opportunities to have bus routes and actually looking at maybe in-route charging. That's not something currently in our program, but we're looking at different ways to reduce the deadhead time that takes operators to get back to a facility. So right now, we could get back to you with that information, but the project remains really moving forward and really excited about that opportunity to give our employees the ability to successfully maintain the new fleet.
And I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you what the plans are for the current bus facility on Hancock Street in Quincy.
Well, that's one of the things where, as we develop new facilities, what do we do with our existing facilities? Just whether it's Quincy or any other area, one of the things is to have very good dialogue with the local community, with the local elected officials, and potential of how do we support quality of life? How do we support maybe transit-oriented development? And look for those opportunities to show that the MBTA is going to be a good partner. And we want to do what's best, not only for the MBTA, but best for the communities that we serve and the communities that we live adjacent to. So we haven't made any final decisions on that, but there's a lot of dialogue going on between us and the city of Quincy regarding that.
Right. We'll leave it at that for now. And I know you're aware of the city's hopes for that
Yes.
parcel, but
And
we won't push you on
we
that.
want to show we're willing partners. We're going to work through a lot of things. And I'm always optimistic that we'll find a solution for everybody.
On the other end of the city, the North Quincy station, can you tell us what's happening with the garage there? It seems to be done, but it doesn't seem to be utilized yet.
There are a few final things that need to be addressed. My understanding is that we anticipate being able to allow that garage to be used for commuters probably in a few months. We'll have more to follow on that, but my folks say that those issues are being resolved, and we know how important that is. At the same time, there are other parking facilities that we know people are using, but certainly to have this facility in use will give those riders the extra option of and convenience of it.
And speaking of hopes of the city, a longer range plan for the Quincy Center Station, as you know, is to completely rebuild that facility. Is that still in the pipeline?
That is in the pipeline as well. We are having good dialogue with them as well. How do we support their plans and how do we work together? That's one of the things that I've always believed in. It's always better for the mass transportation system that is so vital to these different developments be right at the forefront of those discussions. This way, expectations and needs can be discussed openly, and how do we solve them together to support and make sure that those projects can move forward without delay. And at the same time, we have the ability to deliver the level of service that people are expecting when those developments continue.
Yeah, is there a design plan created for the Quincy Center Station yet? Is there a timeline?
No, I don't have that right now, but they're part of that will be coming out of these discussions and making sure we're working together.
One thing that I guess the recent Red Line diversion exposed was expanded ferry service here at Marina Bay in Quincy, and I know that's something that you feel it's important.
Absolutely. When you have access and proximity to such waterfront that we do have here in Massachusetts, why shouldn't we try to take advantage of it? And we have expanded our service with the existing resources that we have. But I also wanted to make sure that we treated this fairly. So, first ever Director of Water Transportation, David Perry, that we announced, he is going to help us lead and shape and mold what we envision for future water transportation. And how do we build upon the existing ones? And how do we expand, right? So, what kind of fleet? Should the fleet be in-house? If we buy new fleet, should it be zero emission? But also, how do we make sure the existing service that we're providing is meeting the customers and public's needs? All of that is ongoing as we discuss the future capital programs and future procurements of material, but also our operating dollars, because that's important. But the other piece is the excitement of going after every federal dollar available, and the $4 million plus that we recently won, or the city of Quincy won with our support, for the Squantum Point Ferry park there. And that is a key piece, making it accessible, making it upgrades, and making sure the facilities are safe and providing the necessary access that to have successful water service and or other types of mode of travel.
Yeah, as I understand it, that grant will fund the repair of the pier, but not the dredging of the channel, I guess, that would be required for a larger service. Is that right?
That's correct.
Okay. So, in your mind, do you have a timeline for when a year-round ferry service could be operating?
You know, that is something that I get asked a lot on a lot of our lines. And really, what we have to do is not only look at to make sure the service we have today is running reliable, but as we dive into those considerations, what kind of fleet do we need? What are the operating dollars that go along with it? And is it sustainable? So those are the things I'm always going to keep an open mind to looking at how we can improve service, because the more reliable and the more frequent it is, I think the more likely people will use it. I have to balance the existing services and make sure they're running safe and reliable, along with, the expansion and growth of systems.
So I'd also be remiss if I didn't ask you, Mr. Ng, do you anticipate any changes in fares on the MBTA in the future?
Well, right now, I'm proud of the income eligible fare program that we launched. The Healey Driscoll administration and the legislature put money in our budget for that. We want fares to be affordable. We want fares to be equitable for everybody. But I also know that fares are a part of the revenue stream that we pull in. But my real goal right now is to get the system running safe, reliable, and making sure that the riders can use the system. At some point, fare probably has to be a part of the discussion. But I also know that we're a public service and we provide a public good, and it needs to be affordable. So there's a balance between what fare should be. But I need to make sure I'm running safe, reliable service, frequent service, I think, as part of any discussion. And if it's not safe, and it's not reliable, and it doesn't matter what I charge, I don't think people will use it, right? So we need to do that first. It's important. But it ha obviously has to be part of a long discussion down the road. Not yet, though, but something in the future to think about.
I know you just recently launched the contactless payment. Do you envision any other technical advances for riders?
Well, one of the other things that we're testing right now is how do we get better real-time information to the riders? So aside from contactless payment, which by the way has been very successful, and every month we continue to see more and more people use it, and that's important not only for the people that live here, but the people that visit. The ease of accessing our system is great. But technology for real-time communication, whether it's station announcements, train announcements, can we do them remotely? But also, can you put information in the palm of people's hands? I know not everyone has a smart device, but those that have it, we're working on a potential new application where people can see real-time information on train locations, and ultimately we'll be able to help give them the assurance, in addition to what they hear in the system, the ability to look in advance before you get to our stations. And I think that is important. But technology is always advancing, whether it's technology on how we operate our system, the signaling system, which is important going from analog to digital. That's right now in the midst of the Red Line and Orange Line, probably both around 50% complete. And that will give us the ability to have improved service, in addition to not just fixing the tracks, but the signals that go along with it, the Red Line cars that go along with it. All of these components are going to add up to a system that I hope people can say they're proud that, they live, work, and play in Boston and Massachusetts area.
Yeah, I know you're pressed for time, but is there anything else you'd like to share right now?
Just one thing. I was given a little note that the Quincy bus facility will be able to handle 120 buses, and that's important. But I just want to say thank you to the public. They're the reason that we do what we do. Their feedback has been invaluable, and I really want them to know that their patience has allowed us to actually accelerate work and deliver better service for them quicker. And as long as they feel it's better, then I'm pleased with it. And our commitment is to continue to maintain it now, but also then how do we build a system for the future? So just want to say thank you very much to all of the riders, to all of the public and the communities and businesses that we serve. It's been a fantastic time, and I'm excited about the future for us.
I appreciate the opportunity to talk with you, and please stop by if you're in Quincy sometime.
I will do. Thank you.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Have a great day.